Worse than murder.
Damn, whispered Tallow, steam puffing about his face. It's cold.
And he wrapped his thin arms tight around his thin ribs and worked his chin into his scarf. Vic's brother used to do the self-same thing in the camps. Bundled up in every scrap of cloth they had, huddled together for warmth, under a blanket she'd got a bloody nose stealing. Gave her a sudden urge to hug Tallow, rub his back, clamp her gloved hands over the red tips of his ears. But Sybalt was the last man she hugged, and he ended up slitting his own throat. So she hawked up cold snot and sent it spinning into the frozen dirt beside the cart instead.
Why do you never have enough clothes?
No one's got enough clothes now.
Scarf on a constable. Not exactly fearsome, is it?
More fearsome than froze to death, I dare say. Vic conceded that with a smoky grunt. He'd hardly be the first one froze to death. They were finding them every morning. In alleyways, in doorways, in cellars. Frost in their eyebrows. Ground was frozen too hard to bury the poor bastards.
Don't you ever get cold? He asked.
Vic got cold. Her throat had been sore for days, her nostrils raw from the running and wiping, running and wiping. But she knew better than to let the pain show. Letting it show is the same as asking for more.
Got colder than this in the camps. Look on the sunny side.
And she snorted up more snot.
If it was warmer, we'd have a plague.
Sounds like you got the plague anyway, muttered Tallow.
If you're concerned about infection, you could always join the burners.
And she nodded down the street towards them. They'd built a great bonfire, images of royalty, symbols of the past, portraits of King Orso, King Jazal, and the many crowned arseholes that had preceded them. Furniture carved with the blazing sun of the Union, curtains embroidered with the devices of great families, cutlery stamped with patriotic mottos, flags, uniforms, wigs, fans, anything that could be considered aristocratic. A burner stomped from a house and flung a full set of crockery splintering into the blaze. Folk gathered dangerously close, eager hands out to the flames, light playing on pinched-in faces. Tallow huddled even deeper into his scarf.
I reckon I'll stay here.
Lucky me, said Vic, though if she was honest for once, she was glad of the company. A sad indictment of the life she'd chosen. The one person she trusted was the one she'd blackmailed into betraying his friends. Pike came striding from the cellar, pulling on his gloves.
Fine work, Chief Inspector Teufel,
he rasped as he watched the constables file up the steps to dump armloads of papers into the cart, the odd one floating free to stick in the half-frozen mud.
A bank hidden in a wine merchant's cellars. We've driven them underground like rats.
A bank of a sort, said Vic. They loaned money to pimps and fences here in the slums, ran pawn shops and jerry shops, invested in gambling houses, husk houses, doss houses, whore houses.
A criminal's bank, muttered Tallow.
Pike narrowed his eyes.
All banks are criminal. The loans here may have been smaller, the interest higher, but the profits flowed into the same coffers, the same ledgers, the same bottomless well of greed. This cellar was a branch of the banking house of Vallant and Bulk as much as the grand building on the Four Corners.
The one in which that vast vault door was still frustrating every effort of locksmiths, engineers, and Gurkish fire. The roots of these vile institutions have dug into every part of Union society. Pike's lip curled as he watched more paperwork flung into the cart. A web of debts and corruption that stretches from the lowest to the highest. Their rot must be hacked away. Two constables had dragged a squealing clerk into the street.
Without doubt, sticks rose and fell, black against the fire. Without hesitation, a limp body was hauled away, head hanging, without mercy. Pike's war on the banks was starting to look fanatical, but there was no denying fanaticism was in fashion. "What about everything else?" asked Vic. The commissioner turned, his breath a smoking cloud about his high collar. "What about everything else?" "No riots lately, I'll admit."
"Too cold for it,"
Tallow whispered, trying to cup the warmth of his breath in his pale fingers. "But robbery, burglary, violence, just as bad as when Risenow was chairman."
"Worse," muttered Tallow, "if anything."
"Lot of homeless on the streets, lot of desperate people. They're coming in from all over, looking for work, when there's less work than ever. Mills closing, manufactories shuttered, no coal, no food." Vic licked her sore lips as she watched the shackled employees of Vallant and Bulk hauled from their cellar. "No money. We must focus on the grand crimes. Let the burners worry about the petty ones." Vic winced down the street towards the bonfire. They weren't burning people on it, as far as she could tell, but only because Judge wanted the proper show of pushing them off the Tower of Chains later. She should have kept her mouth shut. She always kept her mouth shut. But somehow it was getting harder and harder to keep her mouth shut.
"With respect, Commissioner, the burners are as likely to punish the innocent as the guilty."
Pike hardly seemed to hear her. "The banks remain our focus. Usury is the worst of crimes."
"Worse than murder?"
"Murder leaves one citizen dead. The banks infect us all with greed." The flames down the street glimmered in the corners of Pike's eyes. "Are we any closer to finding the manager of the Adua headquarters of Vallant and Bulk? I would very much like to see the inside of their vault."
"We're closing in, questioning the employees, but there are hundreds, and most only know their little splinter of the business. The bank owns property all across the city. No one would ever have believed how much."
"We will take it all back," said Pike, "and give it to the people." Vic glanced towards the fire.
"What'll they do with it?"
"Sometimes to change the world, we must first burn it down," she finished softly. But it was sounding more and more like something a madman says to justify all the fires he loves to start.
"If the manager's in the city, we'll find him."
Pike gave her a stiff nod. "Keep me informed." And he strode away, a dozen constables in tow, past someone standing in the shadows of a doorway on the far side of the street. A woman, with a board propped against her hip, bright eyes darting over Pike and his retinue, towards the cellar and the cart, away to the firelit crowd.
"Make sure all this gets to the House of Truth," Vic grunted at Tallow. "We call it the House of Purity now, remember?"
She was already walking over, slipping her hand into her pocket, finding the chilly angles of her brass knuckles. Best to approach everyone as if they were a threat, though this woman didn't look too formidable. Her lips had a bluish tinge, nostrils pink at the rims, an old quilt around her shoulders with a hole cut for her head to go through.
"Your name, citizeness?"
"Groom, Inspector. Carmi Groom."
She lowered the board. There was a sheet of paper clipped to it, a stub of charcoal in the blackened fingers of her other hand.
"I'm an artist."
Vic relaxed a little, about as much as she ever did.
"So I see. I am sketching. What a painting."
Vic frowned towards the bonfire, the ragged figures warming their hands, the burners dragging people from the buildings, the constables emptying out the cellar that had been a bank.
"You want to paint this?"
"Future generations might never believe that it happened."
She blew some yellow hair out of her face with a smoky breath and went back to sketching, charcoal hissing on paper.
Then it might happen again.